Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, local astronomer and author Nick Lom will join us to discuss solar eclipses. And yes, there is one coming, but not for us here in Melbourne. Well, let's kick off the show with a song which leads into our topic tonight, and it's by the Kids Looning Tube, and it's called Solar Eclipse.
This is a total solar eclipse. Come see my narrow path in which I travel on the Earth's surface. This is a total solar eclipse. My totality is awe-inspiring, so don't miss this. This celestial event is called a solar eclipse. Let me tell you about it so you can understand all this. A solar eclipse is caused by the moon, that is me. I'm passing between the sun and the earth till black is what you see. Here are several stages and some visual tips that you can use to recognize a total solar eclipse. Stage 1 is called a partial eclipse, is when the sun's disk is partially blocked by the moon like this. Stage 2 is called Bailey's Beats, which are bright spots of light. It's when low-lying valleys on the moon's edge allow sunlight through, that's right. Stage 3 is sometimes called the diamond ring. This stage is key, in which marks the last few seconds before totality. The last bit of sunlight that is able to shine through the low-lying valleys creates a single flash of light on the side of the moon. The fourth and most important stage is called totality, when the moon completely covers the disk of the sun. This is what you see. Then comes the final stages, in which the sun will grow a crescent on the opposite side of the Bailey's beads, which once had shown. But before you see this celestial event, there's a few safety precautions for eye injuries to prevent. This is a total solar eclipse. Come see my narrow path in which I travel on the Earth's surface. This is a total solar eclipse. My totality is awe-inspiring, so don't miss this. This is a total solar eclipse. Come see my narrow path in which I travel on the Earth's surface. This is a total solar eclipse. My totality is awe-inspiring, so don't miss this. A solar eclipse has several areas we need to discuss. Take a look at this picture to learn each part is a must. Here's the penumbra, a partially shaded outer region, surrounding the umbra, a fully shaded inner part that's darkened. A partial eclipse is what you're seeing right here, when only part of the luminary of a celestial body is darkened there. This is a total. Total solar eclipse. Come see my narrow path in which I travel on the Earth's surface. This is a total solar eclipse. My totality is awe-inspiring, so don't miss this.
That was Kids Learning Tube from the United States with their song Solar Eclipse. Now we're going to have our guest tonight, Nick Lom, who is an astronomer and an author, and he knows more about solar eclipses than I certainly do. Welcome to the Space Show, Nick.
Good evening, Andrew.
Now, an exciting event will happen on April the 20th. What is it?
That will be a total eclipse of the sun, visible from Northwest Cape on the west coast of Western Australia. That is the only place in Australia that will actually see totality. And total eclipses are most spectacular events, and something like 50,000 people are expected to crowd into Northwest Cape and the town of Axmas, which is far more than they normally can cope with.
Yeah, normally an eclipse track sort of tracks, well, almost right across the globe, in terms of span, not in width, of course, and therefore there'd be a long track along which you could see it. But this one, it only touches at Exmouth. Why is that?
It does have a long track. It is what's called a hybrid eclipse. That is, where it starts in the Indian Ocean, it's an annular eclipse. That is, you can still see a little bit of the sun's bright disk around the dark disk of the moon. It's only.
And what will the people who are actually in Exmouth see?
Well, people in Exmouth will see a total eclipse. So by the time it reaches Exmouth, it will be a total eclipse. And it will remain a total eclipse through Barrow Island, which is off the coast of WA, then Timor-Leste and West Papua. Then after that, it will again become annular and the eclipse will end in the North Pacific.
Okay. And what about people elsewhere in Western Australia? What will they see?
Just like the rest of Australia, they'll see a partial eclipse of the sun. So the further away you are from the track of the eclipse, the less percentage of the sun's disk or the sun's diameter is covered by the moon. So, for example, Darwin is the closest. It's the closest to the eclipse track, Darwin in Northern Territory. And that has the fraction of the moon's diameter is 85%. So it's 85% covered by the moon, as seen from Darwin. Then from Melbourne, it's only 21%.
So we will see something here in Melbourne?
Oh, yeah, we'll still see. But it's only 21%, so one-fifth of the sun will be covered. But we'll see a bite. Now, of course, a bite taken out of the sun. But, of course, extreme care has to be taken when trying to view an eclipse. You should never, ever look directly at the sun because that can do permanent damage to your eyes.
Yeah.
There are eclipse glasses available, which are specially made. But even with those, you have to be careful that they are of high quality and properly certificated. Or the easiest way of doing it is to make a pinhole camera, which is what you take a piece of cardboard, make a pinhole, or you make a number of pinholes. You could actually trace a hole, sort of make a pattern out of the pinholes, and then you project the image with your back to the sun, onto a piece of white paper, and then you should see.
Oh, great!
Normally you would see a circle of the sun's disk, but during the eclipse you will see this small bite. At least if you're watching from Melbourne, you'll see a small bite gradually taken from the sun, and even that's interesting. It doesn't have to. Spectacle that people in Exmouth will experience, but hopefully experience if clouds don't come in the way. But it's still worthwhile trying to see. But as I keep saying, extreme care.
Now, I've been in a situation where there was going to be an annular eclipse several hundred kilometres away, but where I was, the sun was going, I think it was about 90% covered, something like that. And I was out with a group of people watching, and people were walking by and saying, "What are you looking at?" Because they hadn't noticed that it actually perceptibly gotten dark. It's the darkness at that time had level, well, your eye adjusts to it, of course. And so these people hadn't noticed that the sun was being covered over.
No, it has to be considerably more, even more than 90% before people start noticing the drop in brightness. But one thing you can notice, and especially the closer and closer you can come to totality, is that the shadows become sharper because light is only coming from a small region on the sun. So the shadows suddenly become brighter. Normally shadows from the sun are a little bit fuzzy because the sun has a finite area or finite angle of diameter and angle of bits in the sky. But just before an eclipse or when 90% of the sun is covered, the light is only coming from a small area and you get much sharper shadows. So that's something that could be noticeable.
Now, why do people travel all around the world to see an eclipse?
It's just a fantastic experience. I've seen three. On this street, there are people who have seen many more. But each eclipse was just a great experience. Seeing the shadow coming towards you, seeing the shadows becoming sharper, seeing the diamond ring, you see, when the final little bit of light comes through the through mountains or craters or valleys on the edge of the moon, then you get one little bit of light while there's already a bit of the corona around the dark disk of the moon. So you see what's called the diamond ring effect. And then the sun goes out. Suddenly goes out, and you can see it's faint throughout our atmosphere, the corona. And that's something we can never see, never really experience outside an eclipse. So that is what people come to see. And then eventually, whether it's 30 seconds later, a minute, or 5 minutes later, depending on the length of totality, then you see the various phenomena in reverse. You get the diamond ring, and you get the first little bit of glimpse of light from the disk of the sun. Darkness starts to lift. Shadows become less sharp. As I say, it's just an experience. You have to be there to experience it. Mm. And another thing is also because if you go in a group, if you're not watching it yourself, there is this great camaraderie among people and the great excitement. I remember watching the last total eclipse visible from Australia from a beach at Palm Cove Beach in Far North Queensland. It was in 2012. And people started clapping when the eclipse was over. I mean, everybody was just so excited.
I was, for that eclipse, I was in Port Douglas, and I was amazed when I looked along the beach during the eclipse. There were people trying to take photographs, but they'd forgotten to switch off their flashlight, or the flashlight went on automatically, it was so dark. And so the whole thing was lit up with all these flashes going flash, 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 flash along the beach. I thought that was so funny. Anyway.
Yeah, in fact, you always get that when try to.
I need someone like yourself or Mr. Google to tell me when the next eclipse will be. But how on earth did ancient people predict eclipses? Or didn't they?
Well, somehow the ancient Greeks managed to figure out how to do it. They did possibly have calculating machines. There is the famous Antikythera, I think that's a better pronunciation, device, which does calculate the position of the planets and the sun and the moon. So it's possible they had a calculating machine of some kind to predict it. Other times, it might be just observation. The Australian Aboriginal people apparently were able to predict eclipses, at least some experts among them, by just observing the moon just before, a few days before totality, and just seeing that it's actually going to go in front of the sun. So somehow it is possible. Obviously, it's much easier doing that with modern calculators and modern computers it's much easier.
Well, we're talking on the space show with Nick Lom, who is an astronomer, and he's written a book called The Eclipse Chasers, and it was co-written with Tona Stevenson. Nick, could you please tell us a bit about her?
Dr. Stevenson was, for quite a number of years, the manager at Sydney Observatory, where I was the astronomer, I was the curator at the observatory. So I know her from there. Since then, she's obtained a PhD in the history of astronomy, and she's an honorary history affiliate at the University of Sydney.
Mm. And your background, as we've mentioned, is as an astronomer, professional
one. That's right. I have a PhD in astronomy. I worked at Sydney Observatory before it became part of a museum. And then a few years after I started at the observatory, it became part of a large museum in Sydney, the Museum of Applied Arts and Sciences, better known as the Powerhouse Museum. And I remained at the observatory for 30 years. I've now moved to Melbourne, but I'm still I still write to Australasian Sky Guide, which is an annual publication indicating where the planets and the sun and moon are each year, and giving the latest astronomical information, and as well as researching the history of Australian astronomy. Mm. And that's how I became involved in work for this book. I became interested in the 1871 total eclipse visible from far north Queensland. I heard a little bit about it, and then I started researching it. And it turned out to be an extremely important eclipse. This was the first time that the various colonies in Australia had cooperated scientifically. And an expedition was mounted with people from Melbourne, from Sydney, and also one person from Brisbane. And they went up by boat, which they couldn't fly in 1871. They went up by boat up to far north Queensland to Cape York and tried to observe the eclipse. This very well recorded eclipse. Fairly well recorded expedition. There was a newspaper reporter who went along on the travel up to Cape York, and there were two photographers. So it was very well recorded and a very interesting eclipse. And from there on, I started looking at other eclipses that has occurred in Australia. The 1857 eclipse, the 1910 eclipse in Tasmania. My co-writer, Tona, looked at the 1922 eclipse, which is an extremely important eclipse, and you might want to discuss that because that was the famous Einstein eclipse. And then there were eclipses in 1974, visible from Western Australia, and 1976, visible from New South Wales. Particularly Melbourne, it was totally Melbourne. So these historical accounts of past eclipses make up a large part of the book. But we also look at coming eclipses, starting with this one coming up next week on the 20th of April. But there are eclipses coming up. There are four more eclipses coming up in the next 15 years. There is one, which is the really big one, which will in 22nd of July 2028, which will go over Sydney. So 5-6 million people in Sydney will have a chance to see a total eclipse from their backyards.
Oh, right. I believe the track of that one goes from Bourke through Dubbo, Mudgee and Sydney and off out to sea from there.
That's correct. That's correct. So there'll be quite a few other places from where the eclipse will be visible. But the greatest number of people obviously are going to be in Sydney.
Sydney, yeah.
And people just going out to their backyards and trying to observe.
Now, how can listeners to this program get your book, which is called Eclipse Chasers?
It's a book published by CSIRO Publishing. It has a recommended retail price of $39.99. It was released last month in March. There are a number of book launches as well at the time. And they should be available through all good bookstores. The book is also available online from quite a number of places. If people search among the different stores, different online stores, they might find some which sell it for cheaper than the recommended retail price of $39.99. So far, we've had very good reviews and very nice comments because it's a total guide to eclipses in Australia. Puts them in context from including the knowledge of the Aboriginal people, the First Nations people of Australia, the eclipses witnessed by Europeans since European settlement and the coming eclipses, and plus guidance on how to observe them and what's the best way of observing them.
Now, could we just pop back as we leave this topic now, Nick, to that eclipse after the First World War? Now, there's an eclipse that's attributed to Arthur Eddington, proving that Einstein was correct. And I believe Arthur Eddington got a bit more credit than he really deserved. What's the true story behind that?
Oh, that's right. There was an eclipse in May 1919. And Arthur Eddington, who's a very famous British astronomer, of the time, organised two eclipse expeditions. One went to Brazil, Sobral in Brazil, and he himself went to Príncipe Island, which is an island of the west coast of Africa. And what they were trying to do is verify a prediction from Albert Einstein. Einstein predicted that light is bent when it passes near the sun or near any massive gravitational body. It's bent by a very small fraction, 1.75 seconds of arc, which is very, very small. The only way that stars near the sun can be observed is, or at least the bending of the light, is during a total eclipse. So the idea was to take photographs during the total eclipse of stars near the sun and compare those photographs with photographs taken a few months earlier of the same region of the sky with the sun, without the sun. So, and by comparing the two photographs, they expected to try and prove that there was this slight shift in the position of the stars near the sun during the eclipse by this tiny amount of 1.75 seconds of arc, at least when the star was right near the edge of the sun. Okay. Unfortunately, they didn't get good results. They did get some photographs with some stars on them. They measured them, but they had to exclude a lot of them. They arbitrarily chose which points they were going to use in their for their measurement and for their results. And they did announce that they had proved Einstein's prediction of the deflection of starlight, but in fact it was still fairly questionable. And that's why people, astronomers, really wanted further proof.
Well, Nick, we really welcome this book, Eclipse Chasers, written by yourself and Tona Stevenson, available all good bookstores. I won't mention any, but yes, all good bookstores will have it. And it's been out since last month. And we're going to have a poem called In Transit. And it's written by and read by Neil Gaiman. And it's a tribute to Arthur Eddington there. So we'll have that after these messages. Well, thank you for joining us on The Space Show, Nick.
Pleasure to speak to you, Andrew.
Goodbye.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
And now on The Space Show, we're going to go to that poem written and read by Neil Gaiman. It's called In Transit, and it's a tribute to Arthur Eddington, and it has an explanatory introduction.
So every year, Neil writes a poem that is related to the respective theme of the show. And this year, he chose to focus on the deeply humanistic, humane aspect of one of these two great scientists we're celebrating, Sir Arthur Eddington. Eddington was actually this somewhat tragic character to me, at least. He was incredibly shy, introverted as a child, very sort of lonely in a way. And when he went to Trinity, he befriended a young man, Charles, who became his most intimate friend. And they would go on these long bicycle rides together. They were both avid cyclists. And only with Charles would Eddington ever slightly let go of his Quaker values and have the occasional drink or smoke or go to, God forbid, the theater or the movies. And this was, by all accounts, his most intimate relationship. He never married. He lived out his life with his sister, Winifred, who also never married. And this is what this poem is about, in this incredible Neil Gaiman-ish way in which it's actually about everything in the universe. Please welcome Neil Gaiman.
So yes, this is a poem about Eddington. The poem itself is kind of a bivalve or twin sun or something. I decided that because Eddington was somebody who had a public face and did one huge, wonderful public thing, but also had a private side, I'd try and build a poem that had a formal side and one that was more informal. And it's called In Transit. One. To find the many in the one, he sweated under foreign skies to see the stars behind the sun. So space and time were now undone. Reality was undisguised. We found the many in the one. There is no photograph, not one, that shows the mind behind the eyes. He saw the stars behind the sun. Not with a sword or knife or gun, a simple picture severed ties, he found the many in the one. Light bends around us, so we run as gravity reclassifies the stars we saw behind the sun. To see the world beyond the skies, to know the mind behind the eyes, to find the many in the one, he showed us stars behind the sun. Two. in the awkward sense. Retirement will never be an option. The gruff gentleman with the cap who understands what the numbers mean remembers a bicycle ride when he was younger. The smoke of the cigarettes he does not smoke kick at his lungs, mixing with the buzz of the booze he doesn't ever drink. A convivial pint after the ride into the country gave him such a thirst, and afterwards they lay on their back in the stubble, staring up at the stars, together. All the stars. Countable as the words in a Bible. Countable as the hairs on his friend's head. All accountable, and that is why they never truly touched. The shadow of prison or disgrace, perhaps, moving between them, like the shadow of an eclipse. And in another life, at another time, to see the stars behind the sun, he takes his photographs, fighting the cloud cover, becoming the thing that happened in Principe when he proved that the German was right, that light had weight. Half a year after the armistice, a popularizer, but not courting popularity. Some when a boy is counting stars. Some when a man is photographing light. Some when his finger strokes the stubble on another's cheek. And for a moment, everything is relative.
And as we were talking there with Nick Lom, if you want to find the full story of how Eddington is given a bit more credit than he should have for proving Einstein correct, gravitational lensing, read the book, and it tells the story of the eclipse of 1922 here in Australia when that final proof came in. So the book is Eclipse Chasers, written by Nick Lom and Tona Stevenson, and is available from all good booksellers, and also it's available online as an e-book.